Welcome to Think Like a Nurse. This is where we take those really complex clinical topics, the ones that can feel overwhelming, and we simplify them. We're all about sharpening your critical thinking skills right there at the bedside. Today, we're opening the hood, so to speak, on the cardiovascular engine room. We are talking hemodynamics. Really, it's the ultimate language of perfusion. How well are those tissues getting oxygen? Now, this show, Thing Like a Nurse, was created by Brooke Wallace. She's a 20-year ICU nurse, an organ transplant coordinator, clinical instructor, and a published author. And our mission, well, it's to make sure you have that concise, actionable knowledge you need to really excel in those high-stakes situations.
Yeah, and what's so crucial to grasp, I think, is that hemodynamics isn't just a screen full of numbers. It's not abstract data. It is the actual real-time story of how well oxygen is getting delivered, tissue perfusion throughout the entire body. And nurses, you're the first-line clinicians. You're right there. You're in this unique spot to pick up on those really subtle changes, the ones that can spiral downward pretty fast. The stakes are just incredibly high. Think about acute shock. Those subtle shifts, they can lead to irreversible multi-organ failure. And the window is narrow, sometimes just 6 to 12 hours. So mastering this, it's about stepping in quickly, preventing those terrible complications, saving lives, really.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Where do we start? Maybe with the central calculation. The heart as the pump. We need to measure its efficiency. Cardiac output, CRO, that's one, right?
That's the foundation, exactly, yeah. CO. It's simply the volume of blood the heart pushes out every minute. We measure it in liters per minute. And the formula, well, sets up everything else we'll talk about. It's CO equals stroke volume times heart rate, SV times HR, normal range, typically 4 to 8 liters per minute.
Okay, 4 to 8 lumen.
And this number is so critical. There was a recent 2025 meta-analysis, very significant. It directly linked a critically low CO, specifically below 2.2 lumen in a month, when indexed to a 40% higher 28-day mortality and septic shock.
Wow, 40% higher.
Yeah, it just shows... watching this number isn't just academic. It's directly tied to survival.
That is massive. But, in the ICU, we always hear about cardiac index, CI. If CO is so important, why do we need CI? Why the extra step?
That's a perfect example of applying critical thinking at the bedside. Cardiac index, or CI, takes that CO number, and it adjusts it based on the patient's body surface area, their BSA. The normal range for CI is tighter, usually 2.5 to 3.5 mmol.
So it's like leveling the playing field, making it patient-specific.
Precisely. You're normalizing the data for that individual. CI is absolutely essential in patients with a high BSA. Think about your obese patients. If you just rely on the raw CO, you could seriously overestimate how well they're actually being perfused.
Giving you a false sense of security.
Exactly. A dangerous one. Indexing makes sure the number truly reflects perfusion for that patient's body size.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, CO is stroke volume times heart rate. Let's get into stroke volume, SV. That's the amount of blood pushed out with each single beat, right? Around 60 to 100 milliliters.
That's it. 60 to 100 milliliter per beat is the typical range.
And you said SV is the result of three other factors. This is where the nurse can really intervene, isn't it?
Absolutely. SV is the effect. And the causes, the things we can actually manipulate therapeutically, are preload, afterload, and contractility.
The three pillars.
Those are the only levers we can pull, basically.
Okay, let's break them down conceptually. Simple terms, what are we actually looking at with each one?
Okay, preload. Think of it as answering the question, how full is the tank right before the pump squeezes? It's about the stretch on the ventricle walls from the blood filling it up. Ventricular filling pressure.
Got it, the filling pressure. And afterload.
Afterload is about resistance. How hard does the heart have to push to get that blood out? It's the resistance coming from the blood vessels, the systemic vasculature.
Okay, resistance. Makes sense. And the last one, contractility.
Contractility is about the muscle itself. How strong is that heart muscle's squeeze? It's the intrinsic force, separate from how full it was or how hard it has to push, just the pure muscle power.
Preload, afterload, contractility. Okay, that framework really helps connect the concepts to what we actually do. Let's dive into the action then. How do we use these three concepts to guide those life-saving interventions? Let's start with preload, managing volume status.
Right, so managing volume or preload, we use bedside measurements like CVP, central venous pressure, normal is about 2 to 8 mmHg, and PCWP, pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, normal there is 6 to 12 mmHg. These give us a window into those filling pressures.
Okay, CVP and wedge.
Now, if you see signs of low preload, the patient looks dry, maybe hypotensive, CVP is low, you're thinking hypovolemia, the standard intervention, IV fluids. Specifically, a crystalloid bolus, often 20 mmHg, that's a strong class IA recommendation.
Okay, quick clarification, Class IA. What does that mean practically for the nurse listening?
Great question. Class IA means it's got the highest level of evidence behind it. It's based on multiple large, high-quality randomized controlled trials. Basically, it's considered the gold standard treatment. Very strong recommendation.
Gold standard. Okay. So low preload fluids. What about the opposite? High preload.
Right. High preload. Think fluid overload, maybe someone in heart failure. Clinically, you'll see signs like crackles in the lungs, maybe JVD, that's jugular venous distension.
Mm-hmm.
The PCWP might be climbing maybe above 18 millimole Hg.
Okay. So what's the intervention there?
Diuretics. Usually furosemide, Lasix, maybe 40 to 80 milligram IV push. That's also a strong Class IA recommendation for overload.
Okay. Fluids for low, diuretics for high. But, you know, we often worry about just blindly giving fluids, especially if someone's hypotensive, but maybe not truly dry. How do we figure that out?
That's such a critical point. We need to move beyond just those static numbers like CVP. We need dynamic assessments. The best tool we often have at the bedside is the passive leg raise test, the PLR.
The PLR, how does that help?
Okay, so if your patient is hypotensive and you're not sure if they'll respond to fluids, you do the PLR. You put the bed flat, raise their legs up to about 45 degrees. This effectively gives them a temporary fluid bolus, maybe around 300 millilitres from their own legs. Then you look at their stroke volume, maybe using ultrasound or an advanced monitor. If their SV jumps up significantly, say by 15-18% or more, they are likely fluid responsive.
Ah, so it predicts if a real fluid bolus will actually help.
Exactly. If the SV doesn't go up, giving them more fluid probably won't help their pressure and might even harm them fluid overload. You know, this helps the nurse avoid that old one-size-fits-all 30 millipilli key bolus for everyone and prevents over-resuscitation. That's huge for preventing complications like ARDS or prolonged ventilation.
That shift from just static numbers to dynamic tests like the PLR feels like a really big leap in bedside critical thinking. Okay, let's move to the next pillar. Afterload resistance.
Correct. Afterload is all about vascular resistance. The key number here is SVR, systemic vascular resistance. Normal SVR is roughly 800 to 1200 dynes sycamore.
Okay.
And you can think of it like Ohm's law for the circulation. Remember that from physics? Voltage, current excess resistance. Well, here it's kind of like blood pressure, cardiac output times SVR. The resistance plays a huge role in determining the pressure.
BP, COX, SVR. Got it. Okay, let's paint a picture. Classic scenario, septic shock. Patient's MAP is, say, 55. You calculate their SVR and it's only 600. What's happening? What does the nurse see and what do they do?
Right. That SVR below 800 immediately tells you low afterload. Mm. The pipes are wide open, massive vasodilation. And the physical exam usually confirms it. The patient might feel warm, flushed. Their pulses might feel really strong, bounding.
Okay, so the vessels are too relaxed. What's the fix?
The immediate intervention is vasopressors. Got to squeeze those pipes. Usually we start with norepinephrine, levofed. Sometimes you might add a vasopressin if the norepi dose gets high or isn't quite enough. And the key thing is you, the nurse, are titrating those drips constantly, every 5, maybe 15 minutes, making adjustments to get that mean arterial pressure, the MAP, up to at least 65 millimilli Hg and keep it there.
That's intense. Constant titration.
It really is. You are literally the hemodynamic gatekeeper in that moment, fine-tuning the pressure second by second.
That connection between the numbers, like SVR and what you see on exam warm skin, bounding pulses, that's critical thinking in action. Now, what if the pipes are too tight? High afterload. Like a hypertensive crisis, SVR is sky high.
Then you go the other way. You need vasodilators, drugs like a nicardipine drip or nitroglycerin. The goal is to relax those vessels, bring the resistance down, lower the pressure safely and quickly. And again, the nurse is right there, glued to the monitor, making tiny adjustments to the drip rate every few minutes, trying to lower the BP without crashing it, you know, avoiding sudden hypotension.
It's a real balancing act. Okay, last pillar, contractility, the squeeze. This is when the pump muscle itself is the primary problem, right? Mm. Like a low ejection fraction, maybe below 40%.
Exactly. When the intrinsic muscle strength is failing, that's when we reach for inotropes. Drugs like dobutamine or milrinone, they directly boost the force of that heart muscle contraction.
And what's the nurse focusing on when titrating those?
The key nursing consideration is titrating that inotrope drip to a specific target. Usually we're aiming for a cardiac index, CI greater than 2.2. Getting that CI above 2.2 tells us the heart is now pumping effectively enough to perfuse the body adequately, even if the muscle is weak.
Okay. Target CI 2.2 for inotropes.
Right. But then there's the flip side. We also manage negative inotropes, drugs that decrease contractility. The main ones are beta blockers. Now, in stable heart failure patients, slowly titrating beta blockers up is actually a Class IA strategy to improve long-term outcomes.
Right, for remodeling and stuff.
Exactly. But the nurse has to be super vigilant. Before giving each dose, you need to assess carefully for any signs that the heart failure might be worsening, because beta blockers can acutely weaken the pump.
Constant vigilance. Okay, so we've broken down CO, CI, and the three pillars of SV, preload, afterload, contractility, and the interventions for each. Let's zoom out. What's the big picture? The overall impact of the nurse really mastering this stuff at the bedside? Why does this moment-to-moment critical thinking matter so much?
Well, the nurse's impact is huge. It's about early detection, seeing those subtle changes first. It's about the safe, meticulous titration of these incredibly potent medications. These drips aren't set and forget. They need constant adjustment based on the patient's response. And ultimately, it's about the continuous optimization of oxygen delivery to every organ. You're the one managing that tightrope walk, keeping the patient stable, guiding them towards recovery.
And it's not just individual nurses acting alone, right? It fits into systems, protocols. I'm thinking about things like the hourly hemodynamic bundle. Have you seen the data on that?
Absolutely. Those bundles are incredibly effective.
Yeah. The one I'm thinking of requires hourly checks of MAP, CI, maybe lactate, urine output. And crucially, it mandates doing a fluid responsiveness test, like the PLR we talked about, if the MAP drops below 65, before just giving fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Implementing that kind of nurse-led protocol, studies have shown it can lead to something like a 31% reduction in ICU mortality.
That's right, 31%. It underscores how vital that structured critical approach by the nurse is. Mm. You truly are the hemodynamic gatekeeper.
So wrapping this up, what's the main takeaway?
I think the main thing is understanding the direct connection. Every fluid bolus you give, every dose of diuretic, every tiny adjustment you make to a vasopressor or inotrope drip, it directly impacts how much oxygen gets to the patient's brain, their kidneys, their heart, every vital organ. These formulas, these concepts, they aren't abstract. They are fundamentally immediately linked to whether that patient lives or dies, recovers or deteriorates. And actually, before we finish, let me throw out one more concept for you to think about. A provocative thought, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about CO and CI. But in cardiogenic shock, arguably the best single predictor of mortality is something called cardiac power output, or CPO.
CPO, okay, how's that calculated?
The formula is CPO equals MAP multiplied by CO, all divided by 451, and the key benchmark is about 0.6 watts. If you can get the CPO above 0.6 W, the patient's prognosis is significantly better. Below that, it's much worse.
CPO, MAPX, 451, wow.
So here's the thought. If CPO is the ultimate predictor of survival in the sickest heart patients, how does your minute-by-minute mastery of preload, afterload, and contractility, all the things we just discussed, empower you to directly influence that life-or-death CPO number in real time? That, I think, is the true power and responsibility of critical care nursing.
That's a fantastic question to leave us with. How do our actions directly manipulate that ultimate predictor?
Powerful stuff.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation on hemodynamics. It's absolutely essential knowledge, and thank you for joining us. Be sure to check in for more concise critical thinking conversations each week right here on Think Like a Nurse.